Case for the afternoon, United States versus Crawley. Mr. Pettigrew.
Good afternoon, Judge.
Good afternoon. Go ahead.
May it please the court, my name is Albert Pettigrew, and I represent the appellant Jackie Crawley. I wish to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I waive my privilege to speak without questions during 15 minutes. For clarity, I'll refer to the appeal in the 6-1 case as Mississippi Care Partners, and the appeal in the 6-5 case as the Rehabilitare case. All my references to Medicaid refer to Mississippi Medicaid, and all my references to Medicare refer to the United States Healthcare Trust Fund. My dollar figure is going to be rounded to simplify this argument. Precise numbers, of course, are in my brief. The issue I intend to address is that the court lacked authority under Rule 36 of Rules of Criminal Procedure to add Medicaid as a restitution victim. Crawley was convicted of health care fraud while working for Mississippi Care Partners and then Rehabilitare. On June 15, 2009, she was sentenced in both cases at the same time. At that time, the government had a duty to identify all the victims prior to sentencing in each case. In the pre-sentencing report, the government identified Medicaid as a victim only in regard to the Mississippi Care Partners case. It reported a loss for Medicaid of $0.4 million. There was no Medicaid loss reported in the Rehabilitare case. At the sentence and oral pronouncement, only Medicare was awarded restitution, not Medicaid. A month later, the written judgment came out. Medicaid was not identified as a restitution payee. The total combined restitution in the cases was $500, approximately $500 more than was at the sentence and pronouncement.
Now, she's already had an appeal, so, and that was not raised, as I recall, in the appeal.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So there's a waiver question, isn't there?
Because normally there would be a waiver type question, but because we're talking about a restitution order which can be modified at any time into the future, that particular matter does not become a settled matter.
All right, I hear you. I don't know that I'm persuaded.
Okay. But the change in who the restitution is being paid to doesn't have anything to do with the $500. The $500 was in the first written judgment, it's still in this current judgment. So how is your client harmed by this change in payees assertedly to correct who the payee should be?
Ms. Crawley is entitled to the decisions to be based upon accurate information. What has happened is an error was made when the original judgment was made in July, and it has been continued on through these amendments. So she has been harmed by the continuation of that $500.
Well, I'm not talking about the $500 because I don't think that that has anything to do with the Rule 36. To me, you've got an amount. Let's say the amount was $1,000 and it's going to go to Medicare, and now it's $1,000 and it's going to go to Medicaid. How does the change from Medicare to Medicaid change anything vis-a-vis your client?
Medicaid was not identified as a restitution victim in the sentence and pronouncement. It was not identified in the July 2009 judgments as a restitution victim. To add it now as a restitution victim would subject Crawley to the risk of additional future claims by Medicaid that she didn't have before under 1364.
But she would have had them from, I mean, my point is, you owe the $1,000 or your $500, I'm putting that aside for the minute. You owe the money. Why does it make a difference which payee you owe it to? How is this going to hurt her in the future? Let's say she won the lottery and had all the money in the world to give away. How does it hurt her, whether it's Medicaid standing at the door or Medicare or anybody else? That's the part I'm trying to get to.
It hurts her because the Medicaid, because you have one victim right now under the original judgment. And under that statute, I think it's 18 U.S.C. 1364 D5, which covers the restitution procedures. It allows for restitution victims to, in the future, if they discover a loss, it gives them 60 days or something like that to seek additional restitution amounts from the court. by adding Medicaid into the collective pot of restitution victims, you increase her risk, which really, in fact, makes her sentence more onerous to her.
Medicaid didn't just come in here after the judgment. Medicaid's been in the case from the beginning, hasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. Medicaid was identified in the pre-sentence report as a victim in regard to Mississippi Care Partners.
This is a classic case of just correcting a typographical error.
It would seem that way, but in fact, it's more complicated because Medicaid was identified in the Mississippi Care Partners case as a victim in the report, but not in the Rehabilitare case. And you have to consider the fact that we're now talking about a more onerous sentence because it adds this risk to Crawley of additional claims by Medicaid that didn't exist beforehand.
Why, if Medicaid was in there, why didn't it exist?
In Medicaid, the Rule 36 requires that the court go back and can make changes to conform to what was announced at the sentencing pronouncement. The sentencing pronouncement only awarded to Medicare. The court can't go back in and add somebody else because it made a mistake. It's under Rule 36. All they can do is make a clerical correction.
Well, that's what it is, isn't it?
If it's not a clerical correction, when it adds more exposure to Crawley for additional harm.
Well, that's an ingenious argument, but it's still just a mechanical typographical type correction.
It's in terms of being a mechanical correction, it involves more than that. It involves a decision at the amendment judgment that for the court to decide, yes, I made a mistake. I should have added Medicaid to the restitution victims payees. Also, I should determine how much money should be paid to them. That's more than just a clerical error that needs to be adjusted. As a matter of fact, you know, the pre-sentence report had basically about $0.4 million in Medicaid loss reported. But in fact, the amended judgments awarded approximately $0.8 million to Medicaid in the Mississippi Care Partners case and $0.4 million in the Rehabilitare case, even though everybody seems to admit that there was no loss in the Rehabilitare case for Medicaid. So it certainly involved more than just a mechanical adjustment that would have been allowed under Rule 36.
I'm curious, did you make that argument in your brief? Because this is striking me cold. Is it?
I made it in more of a general sense. I've had time to synthesize the argument. I talked about the fact that that there's basically Crawley was entitled to finality in the judgments and to
rights. I didn't recall that there was this distinction argued in the brief about the difference between these two cases vis-a-vis Medicaid. Is that right? Am I just doing
that? That was, I believe, that was
moment?
In there, Your Honor. That Medicaid. I talked about Medicaid being awarded 0.4. I use the exact numbers, and their amount was basically $0.4 million. And then I talked about the fact that there was no award to no finding in the pre-sentence report justifying an award to Rehabilitare.
Now, was this a trial or was this a plea?
Crawley was tried in the Rehabilitare case and subsequently pleaded in the Mississippi Care Partners case.
Now, is there a failure of proof vis-a-vis the Rehabilitare case?
The Rehabilitare case didn't involve any kind of proof at trial of Medicaid loss. In fact, there was testimony that, in fact, there was Rehabilitare had nothing to do with Medicaid. And as far as the proof in the Rehabilitare case, the only proof that there is the report. The indictment listed some bottom line numbers as to how much was lost by Medicaid. And then the pre-sentence report basically took those numbers in the indictment and pasted it into the pre-sentence report and said that was the amount of loss for Medicaid in Mississippi Care Partners. That's the extent of the proof.
So your argument then, which I must say I don't think I had fully grasped until you stood up here, is that in the Rehabilitare case, not only is there was there no judgment awarded vis-a-vis restitution judgment vis-a-vis Rehabilitare, but there wasn't even any proof involved that Medicaid was out anything.
That's correct, John.
In that case.
That's right.
Okay. So that's not, I mean, that's not a Rule 36 problem, though. I mean, it is, it appears here in a Rule 36 problem. You didn't, did you argue, well, now the original judgment awarded the money to the trust, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is it a trust for both Medicare and Medicaid?
It's a federal trust, Your Honor, for just Medicare.
Medicare only?
Yes, ma'am.
So your argument today is this is not simply a reformation of the original judgment. It actually is giving money to Medicaid that there's no proof to support that anything was ever taken from them.
In regards to the Rehabilitare case. In regards to Mississippi Care, it was a $0.4 million loss, according to the pre-sentence report.
Okay. I have to say that escaped me.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, in terms of my argument and my brief.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have anything else you want to add, or do you want to save your time for rebuttal? You can do whichever.
I believe we've actually covered, in your questions, we've covered my points that I was going to make.
Okay, good. Well, save your time for rebuttal then, and we'll hear from Mr. Cleveland.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Gaines Cleveland for the United States. In the amended judgments that Crawley challenges on appeal, she is required to pay exactly the same amount as in the original judgments that this court upheld during the first appeal. The amended judgments did not increase her restitution amount one iota, and it is hard to understand why she should care that Medicaid has been substituted as a victim. The court has already observed that the $500 difference this Mr. Pettigrew raises was already before the court, or could have been before the court in the original appeal, and was not raised, and it is therefore waived.
Well, isn't it true that the oral trumps the written anyway?
The oral pronouncement trumps the written judgment, but that $499 difference was evident when this court considered the original appeal, and Crawley did not raise that point.
Well, this is a $22 million plus judgment?
It's $32 million.
Okay. And we're worried about $499?
I don't think the court should be worried about that.
Well, whatever happened to de minimis non curat lex?
That would apply, and the reality is that if this defendant were ever there's no chance this defendant will ever even get close to that amount in terms of being able to recover the restitution. So
well, hope springs eternal.
That's right.
It's always a lie. What is your response to this point that there's just zero evidence that Medicaid's the right, I won't say guy, but the right entity to receive the money should such money ever find its way into her pocket?
All right. Medicaid was referred to in this Mississippi Medicare partners case that was the plea. That's the plea case. It was referred to in the indictment. It was referred to in the pre-sentence report in the description of the indictment, but it was also included in the specific recitation in the pre-sentence report at paragraph 86 that the probation office had reviewed the claims and they in fact included the exact amount that is in the amended judgment that was corrected by the court. The Rehabilitare was the case that went to trial. And Mr. Pettigrew was right. Medicare was not, Medicaid was the only victim in that case. Medicaid was not a victim. But the way that Medicaid comes in is as relevant conduct based on statewide physical medicine. This court in the first appeal did say that it was appropriate to include both statewide physical medicine and progressive physical medicine in the restitution amount because it would come in as relevant conduct.
What part of res judicata doesn't control this case?
The only thing that changed was the substitution of Medicaid as a payee and the allocution of a payee, and it was an appropriate correction in order to correct the oversight. You had an oversight in the omission of Medicaid, but you also had in the original judgments statewide and progressive were listed in such a way that looked like that they were going to be entitled to receive restitution.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's really a pass-through, that while these are the nominal, statewide and progressive were the nominal victims, really it was Medicaid that was the victim as a pass-through.
Statewide and progressive were companies that were involved in perpetrating the fraud.
Yeah, they were the perps.
They were the perpetrators of the fraud.
Right, but through Mrs. Crawley.
That's right.
So what you're saying is because Medicaid as a pass-through was paying them, then that's how they're the victim. That's what I'm trying to make.
They would never be could never be properly construed as the victim. In fact, it makes the original judgments just evidently.
Well, okay, maybe I should come at it this way. The way you get to Medicaid is because Medicaid paid these guys.
That's right.
So when you listed statewide and progressive, what you meant to say was that was Medicaid paid them and therefore is the victim. That's where the proof is.
Right. I provided the court with an excerpt from our brief at pages 9 and 10, and then showed the correlation between the amounts.
This is your chart?
That's correct. And there also were references as to where in the pre-sentence report the figures come from. But then the court will also see that two of the figures, this is with respect to statewide, this is the orange arrow coming down from the original judgment. It's now broken into two amounts. That figure is from the government's motion under Rule 36 to amend the judgments. So Mr. Pettigrew and his client were aware that the government was moving to amend the original judgments to correct the amounts and provided the correct figures. He had an opportunity to respond. The response was not that the government was not providing the correct figures. The response was much more technical. He basically made the procedural argument that this needed to all flow through the 3664 restitution, the original restitution regimen under Title 18 of 3664, Section 3664. It's our position that is really not implicated when you do a Rule 36 correction of this sort, which is simply a change in the payee or the allocution of the amounts. That's borne out in the Spencer case that this court decided.
Okay, but Mr. Pettigrew's point was there wasn't evidence to support it. What I, maybe not very artfully, am trying to get to is your point is this PSR 145, if we go and look at that, will show that Medicaid is the one who made the payments that are referenced in the original judgment, and now they're actually getting credit for that, if you will, in the amended judgment.
Well, let's take a look. The PSR 145 supports the $9 million figure in the original judgment. This is really the only change that is not in the pre-sentence report. This takes that figure and breaks it into the two sums, one for statewide as to the Medicare amount, and then the other as to the statewide Medicaid amount. Both of those figures are stated in the government's motion to amend the Rule 36 motion.
Well, what does the PSR say?
The PSR only refers to the lump sum $9 million amount. It does not
separate. What does it say about it? I mean, I'm trying to get to the question of evidence. And so what does it say happened with this $9 million?
All it says, Your Honor, is it gives the figure as a lump sum figure And what it says is with respect to it breaks out the amounts for both statewide and progressive, and gives the amount billed and the amount paid in paragraph 145. The amount billed by statewide physical medicine that was determined to be fraudulent, and then the amount paid. It's the amount paid that is the restitution amount. It gives a total sum.
But it doesn't say who did the paying. Is that the part where he's saying there's no evidence?
It does not mention Medicaid, the Medicaid part. That's what I think he's complaining about. That figure, to go to the proper victim, would include a portion going to Medicaid and not all going to Medicare. The government, then, in its motion to amend the Rule 36 motion, properly set forth the amount, and our position is that Crawley had an opportunity to respond and make a factual response, but never did so. So our position, he'd had an opportunity to respond. Now, I did not refer the court to an authority which I think would be helpful on the restitution. There's West has a treatise, a federal criminal restitution, by Goodwin, Greenig, and Fishback, and it's section 1518 of that treatise. It says, Rule 36 does, quote, support a non-substantive change to aspects of a restitution order, such as a change in the distribution among victims or the name of a payee, end quote. And that's exactly what we have here. And in that section of this restitution treatise discussing Rule 36, there's no discussion of Section 3664, which is the provision that Mr. Pettigrew is urging this court to sort of import into the Rule 36 context. We would ask this court to affirm.
Mr. Pettigrew?
I guess just one point on that, Your Honor, that the it seems that the government is arguing that basically, or the court is interested in the fact that statewide and progressive may be just pass through nominal type of restitution pays, and there'd be just a type of change into the names in order to make that into Medicaid. However, on Rule 36, that would require determination of some judgment. Rule 36 doesn't allow that. It requires basically clerical errors that don't involve any kind of determination or judgment by the court. It has to be something has to be a very clear error. That is not a clear error that is in which a Rule 36 amendment can be made. Therefore, it asks the court to vacate the judgments, other portions of the judgments that award to Mississippi Medicaid in both RehabiliCare and Mississippi Care Partners case.
But I mean, if you go back to the original judgment, so let's say she goes out and wins a $32 million lottery net, whatever this amount is. Does she write a check to statewide physical medicine, even though they're not the ones that suffered the harm? Is that what you would have her do?
I have no idea exactly what the mechanics of that would be. If the government does forfeitures involved in these cases, they can have a forfeiture right. They acquire all the rights of statewide and maybe progressive. I don't know, because they're involved in this. I'm not party to those matters. And if they had, then basically any money that went to statewide would go to the government, possibly. But that's just speculation.
I'm back to my original question of how she's heard. So if she would write a check on the original judgment to statewide, statewide has to turn around and pay it over to Medicare and Medicaid because they're the right people that paid the actual money that was lost, then how is she harmed by writing the check directly, assuming a check's ever going to get written?
One thing is that I don't think she'd be writing a check to statewide or progressive, because amended judgments take those people out as restitution payees.
Right. You're trying to get us to go back to the original judgment.
Just as far as Medicaid's concerned, Your Honor.
So the only part of it that you want to fix is this $0.4 million payable to Medicaid.
$0.4 million payable to Medicaid in the RehabiliCare case and the $0.8 million in the Mississippi Care Partners case.
Well, now, let's go forward. Suppose we rule the way you're asking. It takes a remand to go back to the district court, doesn't it?
I believe you're correct under that statute, John.
And when it goes back, it's going to come back with the exact same result.
Well, the court, again, can't, the court below is not allowed to make a change under Rule 36 unless it is a clear error. The government is contending that the court...
This way it would be abuse of discretion, wouldn't it?
I believe that the standard under Rule 36 is that there has to be a clear error. And because there is a clear error standard, that basically the district court and this court are on the same level as far as the review is concerned. So I think it'd be a de novo type review.
But what would we be sending it back to do? To put this money back in Statewide and Progressive, who then would have to turn over and write the check anyway? I don't understand what the district court's going to do in your. So you win this case. What are we right in our opinion?
Basically, Your Honor, that Medicare gets what is awarded in the amended judgments, which is $1 million less than what they originally awarded. You take out Medicaid, and basically Crawley is off the hook for basically $1.2 million.
Oh, okay. Now we finally, 30 minutes into it to me, or 40 minutes into it, get to a bottom line. You want $1 million off the original judgment, not just fixing it to go back to where it was.
That's right, John.
Okay.
Okay. I think we have it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. We call